If you think about sports agents, for most of us, the first thing that comes up is probably Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire. Or if you really know your stuff, perhaps name big football agents like Jorge Mendes or Paul Stratford. Either way, you're thinking big stars, big deals, big paydays, and even bigger egos. But is this an accurate impression of the life of the sports agent? Here to give us their inside look of people trying to show our sporting heroes the money are the Managing Director at Navy Blue Sports Management, Niall Woods, Director of Lineup Sports Media Entertainment, David McHugh, and Founder of Galvan Sports Management, Sinead Galvan. Guys, you're all very welcome to the programme. Now, this is a fascinating subject and one which is a great, great interest level for many of our listeners. I'm going to start with you, Niall Woods. You're a former rugby player. We know you from the rugby field, and you were also involved with the Players Association and negotiating contracts. So you have form both as somebody who's participated in the sport and then somebody who negotiated on behalf of a sports body. How important were those credentials in coming into this business?
I think I'm unique, certainly in rugby agents anyway, that someone who's, there's plenty of ex-players who are agents now as well, but the fact that I did almost 10 years between the English Players Association and then 8 years here, running Europa, that it gives you a different skill set. Obviously, as an ex-player, you know, particularly the age I'm at now, most of the coaches I played with or against, some are 5-10 years older and 5-10 years younger. So, hey, you immediately sort of have contact straight away. And then on the Europa side of things and the Players Association, anytime there was an issue, it reverted back to the contract of employment. So a lot of my work revolved around that. The sort of non-glamorous parts of sports agency in the Players Association was I created an income protection product, sort of lobbied to keep the sportsman's tax relief in place when the government were looking to remove it sort of late 2009, okay. 2010. So, yeah, it's a different skill set.
And only about 5% of rugby players actually get sponsors. Would that be right? I would have thought the figure was far higher than that, but...
Yeah, I mean, Dave would say it as well. It's really, there's a handful in Ireland of the top rugby players make any decent sort of money from sponsorships. So the bulk of the work, certainly I do, is on contracts, negotiating their contract of employment with the province, with Ireland, whatever it is, and trying to maximise that as much as possible.
Okay, let me bring our second guest. He's David McHugh. He's a former sailor. He's still a sailor, actually, because I know he's still very active in the sport. Represented Ireland in Sydney, isn't that right, David?
Tried to, didn't actually make it.
Okay. And you started the business in 2007, is that right?
Yeah, I set Tryline Sports up, as it was formerly known, back in 2007 when I left Leinster. And that's, I discovered from my LinkedIn profile 10 years ago this year. It rebranded in 2011. And it's been a challenge setting up a business right at the start of recession. But I take great pride in the fact that I'm still here 10 years later and the business is growing. So,
and David, you describe yourself as a sports consultancy business with an athlete management wing. So... is only one part of what you do.
It's only one part. We would be more specialist in the commercial and sponsorship and marketing consultancy piece. Or should I say not more specialist, but it's one strand of what we do as a business. The second strand is the athlete management side. And the third strand would be a strategic consultancy for national governing bodies and brands and sponsorship.
And is that around needs must in terms of being in these different aspects of sports management in terms of making it all work?
Yeah, people often ask what is sports management and what is sports marketing? And in a country like Ireland, it's quite broad because we're a small country for a start. So you have to be not necessarily specialist in everything, but you have to have experience in every aspect. So as Niall mentioned, contracts are hugely important for rugby players, but there are other sports people who don't have employment contracts where building their brand and growing their commercial income is more important to them. So I think having a broad sweep understanding, and Sinead will tell you as well from her experience at national governing body and agency side, that you can be very generalist in Ireland rather than very specialist.
Okay. And just before we bring in Sinead, you mentioned that when you started in 2007, there were 35 rugby agents, now there are 12. So it's clearly about reputation and about, you know, specialisation, that there isn't room for
35. Well, I think 35. Firstly, it's about regulation. And over the last 10 years, the industry has become quite regulated. And there is a process in place for those of us that are acting on behalf of professional rugby players that we have to adhere to, CPD, and we have to have the right insurance in place, etc. So it's kind of made the pool a little bit smaller, but no less competitive.
Okay. Let's bring in our third guest. She's Sinead Galvin. She's a former athletics championship and she also has an agency background. Sinead, tell us a bit about you and your company.
Yeah, so I've just started up since September of last year. So I had worked in brand management, then had worked in Athletics Ireland and then went on and worked in Wilson Hartnell in their sports practice. So I suppose I decided to start a business off working on what I really loved, which was the athlete side of things and also in the general sports marketing comms side of things. But I decided from an agent point of view, the marketplace was very well served in rugby, NGA.
So these two competitors here, are they?
Yeah, well, they probably are in their space, but actually we are all competing in the one space as well, because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is link sports people with brands.
Yeah.
So what I felt was that there was a gap in the market to represent, you know, male and female athletes across multiple sports, bring a bit of diversity into the marketplace. And also, I suppose from my point of view, I was looking very much from with the brand hat on. So I tried to consider where was their personal brand positioning at. So that when I was trying to think, well, if they have a certain brand personality, what brands could they be linked with?
Okay.
So I kind of pretty much identified a gap in the market and felt that there was an opportunity to start up an agency in a niche gap that currently existed.
And is a man with ball in hand more marketable than a great female athlete?
Are you referencing back to a quote back on myself? Yeah. What I think is that everybody has certain things to offer. I think there are definitely challenges with men with balls in their hands, because at the end of the day, there are certain constraints that are in place for team players that aren't there for individual players.
Yeah.
It's a real issue, particularly with GA players at the moment. There was an incident during the week which a lot of the journals were giving out about, because there was two key GA players there at a particular press launch and the media weren't allowed to speak to them because their managers say you're not to say anything. There's this 10-day ban, whereas that isn't in place for the individual sport.
And that's a real frustration for the media particularly. And then all that knocks on to the public at large, on the basis that, you know, you get a sports star who you want to talk to and get his personality, and you're getting these sort of clipped lines of what he'll say and what he won't say.
Very bland.
Makes for very dull radio.
Dull radio, dull press coverage, all of the above. So I think that, you know, that's an issue for the sports bodies to look at and to consider. But my challenge in terms of the athletes that I represent is to knock on doors and say, okay, here's an alternative to that. That's
right.
All I want to do is put them in the consideration set. I've worked in an agency. I know how manic it can be. And when it comes to deciding who those brand ambassadors are, you need to be top of mind. So I'm doing a lot of knocking on doors and making sure that the people I represent are in the consideration set.
Let me bring Niall Woods back in again. Niall, you've been in the business a long time, and you know, is it a cruel business in that you actually have to drop somebody? In other words, you know, that you're representing somebody. Sports is an infinite timeline. You know, we all know that you've got your early years, your peak, and then maybe your sort of twilight years. Like, do you have to say to somebody, sorry, look, I no one wants you?
You do. Thankfully, it's only been a couple of times, and I've had one player who wasn't really making it, and he actually was honest enough to say, he said to me, maybe I'm not cut out for professional rugby. But you also have to be able, the ability to be straight with him and say, I think you're right, because otherwise you're searching, trying to get him a job, and if you can't get him one, then you're leading him on unless you'll be straight with him. So sometimes it's in the minority, obviously, but not everyone can make it. Everyone wants to play for Ireland as an Irish player. Everyone wants to play for Munster, Connacht, Ulster, Leinster as a kid growing up now. When I was playing, you wanted to play for your club, province and Ireland, whereas it's just about the province.
And to be fair to your profession, you need a suite of people that are current and in demand, you know, in terms of getting value and in terms of having something to sell.
Yeah, as Sinead and Dave, it's commission-based is how our businesses work, so it makes it a lot harder. There's no real guaranteed revenue coming in, so you're constantly driving it. We're all running our own businesses. It's like any other industry. You have to keep working. It's hard work.
Yeah.
Connections, getting out there, making sure your clients are out there, and trying to get them the best deal.
Okay.
So collaboration. I mean, it's fair to say we all cross paths, we all help each other out where we can, where there's no conflicts, because it is a very small industry in this country particularly.
And that's where reputation and respect, as Niall says, comes into it.
Yeah, and maintaining your respect and integrity amongst your peer group and the people you work with is also hugely important.
Now, we are talking sports management. If any listeners have any texts, we have three experts here in the studio. Send them in, 53106. It'll only cost you 30 cents. If you are a rugby player who needs to be represented, we need to hear from you. David, can I just go back to you and say about how do you deal with sort of difficult talent? I came across a sports person recently that was represented by about six different people. Is that uncommon?
I would say it is. I mean, I think we all pride ourselves on having a loyal following and community within our stables as such. But, you know, there is, at the end of the day, only two things that people understand: time and money. So that is the driver of relationships. The retention of athletes, be it rugby, high performance sport, GA, boxing, surfing, whatever the sport happens to be, I think we'd all agree is based on relationship and delivering a return on objectives for them. And Niall and I are fortunate to work in rugby in some respects. We rugby is an anomaly in this country. It is the only professional sport in town, so it is hyperinflated. It is front and center.
It's relatively new as a professional sport, as Niall will tell you.
Essentially, yeah. And you referred to, you know, the potential for players to earn commercially as being about 5%. I mean, I think in any sport, the first four or five names on the team sheet tend to be the ones that have an on-field profile and also an off-field ability.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about is, I suppose, the difference between different sports. Like, if you take golf, you say you have to be based in the US probably, you know, to get real income out of it. What about soccer? That seems to be a bit of a lottery, and it tends to be very, very hard-nosed.
I would agree with that, and I've never dipped my toe in the soccer world for two reasons. One is I don't have a huge interest in it at a personal level, and two is it is a bit of a shark pool. And in order to be good at what we do, we have to specialise in what we know best. And you know, soccer would not be up in my top three sports. And that's not being disingenuous to anybody who works in that. It is probably, like golf, far more profitable than high performance sport or rugby. But it is also an awful lot more competitive. So it's about sticking to what you know and trying to be the best at what you do.
I have loads of texts coming in, but I want to just bring back in Sinead. Sinead, social media and the influence of social media with, I suppose, the people that you represent. When you've got sports stars competing with the likes of YouTube stars like Rob Lipsett and these type of people that I see my kids actually sort of saying, this guy is absolutely amazing, Dad. And I say, well, I've never heard of him. And it's like, well, he's this, this and this. So a sports star who's played for Ireland, you know, can effectively be up against a celebrity who really hasn't achieved, and not that he hasn't achieved a lot, but hasn't achieved, I suppose, a lot from a professional or from a sporting perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I'd agree with that, because ultimately, brands are going to look at who is going to give them the biggest reach and the biggest engagement. Whereas before, it would have been sports stars could have given them a lot of reach, but now people are looking at engagement through social media, and often these people are self-generated through their blogs, through YouTubing, can have a far bigger reach in terms of followers. So when I look at the competitive set now, I'm not just looking at what might be going on in other sports, I'm also considering what's happening there. But the flip side of that is, particularly in the sports that I represent, that I feel there's a massive opportunity for those athletes if they can become really strong and powerful on social media, because they're not curtailed by some of the other rules and regulation, that's a massive opportunity. So that's a big part of, you know, when
What you're saying is that a GAA player effectively has one hand tied behind his back on the basis of he's competing with somebody who has no restrictions, and they can build up more followers, hence be more valuable.
Yes, I would say so. So someone like Thomas Barr that I represent was able to throw out a tweet literally because he's so relaxed about 2 hours before he lined up in the Olympic Games, and that created a huge amount of interest and stories.
I saw he tweeted
and
about our own show yesterday as well. I was delighted to see it, Thomas Barr. Thank you for that, Thomas. I have a text in that you might help me with. Bobby, aren't the PR people responsible for a lot of this bland coverage that Sinead mentioned there? Everyone turns up and gets the same lines from a sports person to go into the paper the next day, along with the PR line in the end. Everybody's nodding of heads.
Yeah, certainly with regard to rugby, the Contract of Employment has certain rules what they can and can't say. The PR person in each of the provinces that are the teams will brief the players before they're put out, and it's generally toe the party line or the team line, don't say anything too much about yourself. So again, going back to Sinead, someone like Thomas Barr can say what he wants, whereas a rugby player or sometimes a Gaelic player can't do that. Yeah. So it is frustrating, and even for us, when you're trying to get them commercial opportunities outside the game, unless they get their personality out through interviews, which sometimes they're curtailed by the rules of the contract, it's very hard for brands to see them as someone they want to be partnered with.
The flip side as a professional sports is that these rules and regulations are in place to protect the intellectual property of the rights holder. So be it an IRFU or a provincial team or a competition, you're bound under your employment contract to adhere within the rules and regulations to protect them and their sponsors. When you're acting in an individual capacity in a commercial sense, when you're not connected to any brands other than the ones you have a personal connection with, you have a little bit more license.
I see.
But again, those opportunities only really adhere to the top tier of people. So it works both ways. And yes, I think media definitely has become a little bit bland, but it is professional sport. Step out of rugby for a minute and football and GA and look at individual sports. There's definitely more license to talk openly, more license to be themselves, and more license, again, within certain restrictions, to deliver key messaging, but do it in their style or tone. And, you know, this influencer space is interesting, and from my perspective, I see it as more damaging to sports brands as people than it is commercially viable, because you're separating social influencing out from other parts of the marketing mix.
Okay. Last word to you, Sinead. You have to be pretty thick-skinned in this business, and you have to be a hustler. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Every day I hustle, that's for sure. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I think the competitiveness I had as an athlete comes to the fore in that. I just want to get those deals for the great athletes I represent.
And is it about sort of getting down, when you say hustle, it literally is that?
It is, because at the start of the year I sat down with all my athletes. I know what our objectives are, I know what we're looking to do, and I'm out there with my target lists trying to get in front of people, persuade them, encourage them, gently nag them, do all those things to get the deal across the line for them.
Well, I want to be on your team, Sinead. Okay, Sinead Galvin, founder of Galvin Sports Management, David McHugh, director of Lineup Sports Media and Entertainments, and Niall Woods, managing director of Navy Blue Sports Management. Thanks for a great discussion. Really appreciate you coming in.